This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Antoinette Grajeda. Art for a New Understanding, Native Voices, 1950s to Now, is on view at Crystal Bridges through January 7th. The exhibition, which was organized by the Bentonville Museum, features about 80 artworks created by 40 Indigenous U.S. and Canadian artists. Mindy Besaw is co-curator of the exhibit and co-author of a new book published by the University of Arkansas Press that expands on the exhibition. Earlier this week, Besaw stopped by Studio 123 to discuss the significance of these projects.
It's important for Crystal Bridges because it goes along the lines of questioning the boundaries and perceptions of what contemporary art can be, American art can be. These are artists that don't often have a very visible role in that wider story, so we're hoping to bring that more to the forefront.
And so the book has the same title as the exhibition. Do you typically create a book to accompany exhibitions, or is it kind of just ones that lend themselves to that?
Well, I would say Crystal Bridges is still fairly new at organizing our own exhibitions. So unlike being a host for an exhibition that might have originated in another place and then traveled to Crystal Bridges for a time and then it moves on to another one, this is one example of an exhibition that's been originated here at Crystal Bridges. So as one of the co-curators of the project, we're really originating the content, the scholarship, all of the elements of the exhibition, and then it will travel to other places. This year marks the first time we've had two out of the three of our large exhibitions originated by Crystal Bridges. This catalog is the first in a partnership with the University of Arkansas Press. So the hope is, and the plan is, that moving forward, the University of Arkansas Press and Crystal Bridges will work together whenever we're producing our own exhibition. So this is the first in a long line of a relationship with the University of Arkansas Press.
So what did you learn from this experience being your first time working with the press?
Oh, well, it's great to have a press and to have people who are within consultation distance. I can talk to someone in person to say, on page 63, I don't really like the design, but instead of having to describe that over the phone, we can sit down, look at the design together, talk about maybe just changing the size of an image to better reflect the emphasis within the content of the book, and really get a nice product out of that kind of back and forth and the discussions.
What was the research process like for you as a curator, and especially when you're curating your own exhibition? Mm-hmm. You have to do a lot of research ahead of time. You have to make the little signs that people read next to the art. And so that's already done. So does that make it easier to translate it to a book, or was there a lot of additional research that needed to be done?
Well, I would actually reverse the order of things. So the content for the book follows the concept of the exhibition, certainly, but the content of the book then was actually incredibly helpful to develop the labels and didactics within the exhibition itself. We are working towards a goal of getting content for the book into the University of Arkansas Press 7 months before the exhibition opens. Now, I will say this one was a little behind, and I'll take some of the credit for some of those delays, but in the concept of the exhibition, there are certain things that we can absolutely cover and put first and foremost with the artwork itself. But there are other topics we would love to address in more depth. And this book allowed for those kinds of topics to be explored in more depth. So by inviting six different authors to really contribute different perspectives, bring some of their experience to this topic. And in fact, we invited authors who haven't been writing exclusively on Indigenous art. So from a more contemporary art standpoint, to say, what would your writing look like, or what might a topic be if you were to look specifically at these artists, which maybe you haven't been thinking about in more depth? And that kind of crossover, so going beyond just those who have been thinking about specifically these artists to people who have been thinking more contemporary art more broadly, helps us with our goal of getting the artists out into that broader content.
What is an example of one of the topics that you explore a little more in depth?
I'm going to point out two.
Please.
One of the essays in the book is by an author named Amelia Jones. And Amelia Jones thinks about especially performance art in a real broad contemporary art sense. And she wrote an essay called Indigenous Bodies, Native Performance, and Temporalities of Being. So really looking at performance artists in this particular exhibition. So that extends from the 80s through even the present time. So more of a thematic approach to the artwork in the exhibition and really giving some new insights, bringing some of her past scholarship to this topic. So fetishized bodies, real scholarly look at one sense, which is something that the University of Arkansas Press grants us, is that extension into a new audience that might not necessarily be those who come to the museum, but can use this book in the future for anything from class, you know, assignments to other considerations of the topic in the future. And then in another sense, Richard William Hill writes very specifically about a certain time period. So looking at the early 70s and 80s, what he's chosen to focus on is Indigenous identity. So this phrase that comes up repeatedly in artist interviews, I am an artist who happens to be an Indian. So what comes first? Is it your identity as an Indigenous person? Is it your identity as an artist? And he takes a bit more of an in-depth look at a particular couple of decades. It was important for us that our authors come from a variety of backgrounds as well. So contemporary art, that some were Canadian as well as artists from the U.S. or authors from the U.S. And some are Indigenous themselves, some are not. So really keeping with the depth and breadth of the exhibition to get some variety in the contributors.
You mentioned the depth of a specific time period. This exhibition in the book itself looks at art from the 1950s to now. Yes. How did you settle on that decade? Because there has been Indigenous art for a long time.
Correct. So the 1950s came to us not because that was the advent of any particular contemporary art movement, but more because in the 50s, started to see a paradigm shift, a moment of artists collecting and coming together, making some strong declarations to say, we want to make art that is contemporary, that is influenced by any number of, you know, popular culture, art movements, our own cultural background, and we're not going to be limited anymore by what the perceived definitions of Native art might be. And so we were looking at the artists that really shifted that development of contemporary Native art. So someone like Oscar Howe, who in the 50s writes a letter that states, we should not be so limited by what we think this should look like. I am an Indigenous artist, so therefore whatever I'm making is Native art. I don't have to be limited by those accepted or perceived notions of what that should look like.
And through the exhibit and the book, it seems that the intent is very much to broaden people's idea of or understanding of what Native art is. And we talk a little bit about how it's, you know, contemporary art and that sort of thing. Is there an example or how has Native art influenced other genres of art?
Oh, that's a good question. I think it's more about all of this art existing at the same time and interchanging back and forth. In the 50s and 60s, artists like abstract expressionists were looking at Navajo sand painting and other action type artwork. So Jackson Pollock being one example of that. But I think what we're hoping to get across is that this art existed and was going to be made in dialogue with all of the other contemporary art that was being made, not existing just because a contemporary artist was looking at Native art. And I'm not sure that I'm saying that quite in the best realm, but our hope is to say, Yes, of course, that's a fact that Jackson Pollock was looking at Native American art as an inspiration and influence. But these artists deserve to be examined, celebrated, and studied without any kind of mainstream artist as a measure for them.
We just so often talk about how, you know, Native artists, for example, in the contemporary setting might have been inspired by so-and-so, and they've incorporated this aspect into their art that way. And so
how
I was just
flipping.
I was wondering if it flips the other way.
Yeah. Well, one example in the exhibition is a painting by Lawrence Paul Yekwe Lupton, and it's Scorched Earth Shaman Coming to Fix. It's a large, colorful painting with two figures in it that are a bit abstracted. It uses Northwest Coast ovoid shapes. All of the trees have either faces on them, eyes on them. The mountain really comes alive, again, with brightly colored shapes and forms. If you're an astute art historian, you would see a little bit of Salvador Dali in the painting itself, in a kind of melted face leaning over a log. And one of Lawrence Paul Yekwe Lupton's comments is, the surrealists were using Northwest Coast imagery and masks really without any kind of information about cultural context, just appropriating the imagery because they thought it was nice and it seemed maybe a little strange and it fit within their ideas of influence. And Lawrence Paul is saying, I'm going to take Dali and take that back. And this is mine. This is part of my culture and heritage. So I'm going to sort of reappropriate it. It's a bit tongue-in-cheek, but it's also incredibly serious at some level. So these artists are part of broader circles of conversation, and they're going to be influenced and influencing anyone that they're in touch with. Athena Latoka, one of her very closest friends and fellow artists, is Howardina Pendel, who's an African-American artist working in New York. So just because they're part of a particular tribe doesn't mean that their circle of influence is limited. And I think we're just saying these are contemporary artists, period.
The title of the book and the exhibition, Art for a New Understanding, where does that come from?
Art for a New Understanding comes from a series of work by Brian Jungen called Prototype for New Understanding. He made these in the late 1990s and early 2000s. They're a series of sculptures that look a bit like Northwest Coast masks, but upon closer inspection are made of Nike shoes, so Nike Air Jordans, to be more specific. Where Brian Jungen takes the title from is actually a treaty document. And what he was looking at, again, is this appropriation of culture, perhaps a misappropriation of culture, and a reflection of stereotypes. He is from a Canadian tribe. For him and for Canada, for First Nations people, Northwest Coast imagery tends to stand in as one singular identity for a nation filled with more than 600 independent, unique nations. So he was playing off of some of those broader stereotypes in the red, white, and black color scheme, pulling them together and making some conflating comments also about the commodification of a culture. So these masks or sculptures put another twist on stereotypes. They put another twist on commodification. They unpeel or peel back the layers of what Native American art can be, where the sources come from. And so it felt like a really fitting title for the exhibition as well.
When the exhibition closes in January, will any of the pieces remain in Crystal Bridges' collection?
Five of the objects in the exhibition are part of Crystal Bridges' collection already. So we're very proud of that. We've had several of them in the collection for quite a few years now. And so Anita Fields, a Fritz Scholder, Shan Goshorn, James Lavador. So several of the objects are already in our collection. And, of course, we're using this exhibition as a way to show artists that could also potentially enter into the collection. So who knows what will happen between now and January, or at least in the future, spreading our familiarity with these artists to our audiences and seeing kind of where that takes us.
The book is Art for a New Understanding, Native Voices 1950s to Now. And one of the authors is Mindy Besaw. Thank you for your time. The book is available now.
Thank you. My pleasure.
That was Mindy Besaw, co-author of the book Art for a New Understanding, Native Voices 1950s to Now. She came to the Carver Center for Public Radio earlier this week. The exhibition that is expanded upon in this book will be on display at Crystal Bridges through January 7th.